Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Bruce Alpert, Marcia James, Mario Ritter, and Alice Bryant. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Marcia James.
American presidential candidate Donald Trump continues to say the election process is rigged. Trump, a businessman, is the candidate of the Republican Party. The Democratic Party nominated former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton as its candidate.
Wednesday night, Trump and Clinton met for their final debate before the November 8th election. Trump was asked if he would accept the results of the vote, win or lose. "I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now," Trump said. "I'll look at it at the time. What I've seen is so bad. First of all, the media is so dishonest and so corrupt, and the pile-on is so amazing." On Thursday, Trump appeared to joke about if he would accept the results of the vote.
"Ladies and gentlemen, I want to make a major announcement today. I would like to promise and pledge to all of my voters and supporters and to all of the people of the United States that I will totally accept the results of this great and historic presidential election if I win.
Trump went on to say he has the right to challenge the results in the case of a questionable result. At the debate, Clinton described his comments as horrifying. Some of her supporters said Trump is, in effect, telling his supporters to believe that if he does not win the presidency, it will be because of an unfair voting system.
Over the years, the United States has had a number of presidential elections in which the results were disputed. But historians and election experts say it is unusual for a candidate to raise concerns about fraud before people vote. Our institutions, like our election system, is one of the bedrocks of American democracy, said John Husted, a Republican who serves as Ohio's Secretary of State. "We should not question it or the legitimacy of it. It works very well." A new report says voting fraud is unusual and does not happen on a scale even close to that necessary to rig an election. The report comes from the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. One reason massive fraud is unlikely is because there is no single government office that controls presidential elections.
National elections in the United States are the product of work by 50 state governments. and the Republicans now control 67 of 98 state legislatures, more than any other time in American history.
Peter Castor chairs the Department of History at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. He said an important way of making sure that Americans accept the election results is what is called a concession speech. It is a speech in which the losing candidate accepts defeat and congratulates the winning candidate. Castor said the 2016 election is unusual. Both Trump and Democrat Bernie Sanders, who fought Clinton for the Democratic nomination, told voters that the system is rigged to help big companies and business people with ties to political leaders.
Those arguments about a rigged economy could well make their supporters more likely to question if the election itself is rigged, Castor said. Some Sanders supporters said the candidate was not treated fairly during the Democratic presidential nominating process. Heather Cox Richardson is a history professor at Boston College in Massachusetts. She likens some of the Americans who support Trump to voters in the late 1800s who thought African Americans and immigrants were taking their jobs.
President Barack Obama will leave office on January 20th, when the winner of the 2016 election takes his place. Obama said one of the great things about American democracy is that the losing candidate congratulates the winner, even after a difficult campaign. I'm Marcia James.
And I'm Bruce Alpert.
The ruling and main opposition parties in South Korea are in a dispute over claims made by a former South Korean foreign minister. They are arguing about a vote on North Korea's human rights record at the United Nations 10 years ago. The dispute involves a possible presidential candidate and might help shape the country's 2017 election. Voters may base their choice on one major issue: how to deal with North Korea. The ruling party proposes tough measures against that government. The opposition favors new efforts to negotiate with the country. A new book is at the heart of the dispute. Former Foreign Minister Song Min-soon is the author. Song's book suggests that South Korea sought North Korea's opinion before a 2007 vote at the United Nations. The measure called for condemning North Korea's human rights record. In the end, South Korea abstained from the vote. The book says South Korean politician Moon Jae-in was involved in the decision to avoid the vote. The dispute has gone to the National Assembly in Seoul. The opposition denies it had any communication with North Korea before the 2007 UN vote. A Minju Party spokesman accused the ruling party of trying to smear Moon Jae-in. They are using all intimidating words such as collusion, approval, and pro-North, the spokesman said. Moon has said former President No Moo-hyun's administration made the decision to abstain. He said the South Korean government was increasing economic aid and exchanges to develop inter-Korean cooperation at the top. The ruling Saenuri Party is calling for a task force to investigate if there was a plot to consult with North Korea before the 2007 vote. This is not the first time the Saenuri Party has accused the opposition of working too closely with North Korea. Saenuri officials accused the opposition of surrendering control of a sea border in 2007 negotiations with North Korea. The ruling party made the accusation before the elections in 2012. Later, official documents were released that showed the sides agreed on a jointly enforced fishing area and a peace zone. But the accusation against the Minju Party helped the Saenuri Party look strong on North Korea. The Saenuri Party won the presidential election. In legislative elections this year, however, voters showed concern over hardline policies on North Korea. Opposition parties became the majority in the National Assembly in mid-April. Critics of South Korean President Park Geun-hye say sanctions and UN resolutions have not made the country safer. They say the measures also have not stopped North Korean nuclear and missile tests. However, more than 20 missile launches and nuclear tests in January and September make it unlikely that measures against North Korea will ease too much. Top South Korean and American diplomats and defense officials met Wednesday in Washington. They discussed the security commitment that the two countries share. They also talked about the threat of North Korea's nuclear weapons program. Afterwards, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and South Korean Minister of Foreign Affairs Yoon Byung-se spoke to reporters. Kerry said any use of nuclear weapons would be met with an overwhelming and effective response. Hours later, North Korea carried out a ballistic missile test from the northwestern city of Kusong. South Korean and U.S. officials said this test failed, as did an earlier launch Saturday. Moon Chung-in is a North Korea expert and was an advisor to the late President No. He says whoever becomes the opposition party presidential candidate will likely offer something different from current tensions. But he says that would combine some tough policies with engagement efforts. I'm Mario Ritter.
United Nations says the war in Afghanistan killed more than 2,500 Afghan civilians in the first 9 months of 2016. More than 5,800 others were wounded. The UN Assistance Mission in Afghanistan released the findings on Wednesday. The mission repeated its call for all sides in the Afghan war to prevent harm to civilians. The number of civilian casualties represents a 1% decrease from the same period in 2015. However, deaths and injuries among Afghan children increased. A mission statement said UN officials have been deeply concerned about the rising number of child casualties since 2013. It said that the mission documented 639 deaths of Afghan children in the first 9 months of 2016. More than 1,800 others were injured. UN officials blamed Taliban-led anti-government forces for causing 61% of all civilian deaths. The Taliban ruled most of Afghanistan from 1996 until late 2001, when it was ousted from power. The United States and its allies raided the country after the September 11, 2001 Al-Qaeda terror attacks. They accused the Taliban of providing shelter to Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. The UN report noted that fighting between Afghan forces and rebels was the leading cause of civilian casualties this year. Other major causes include suicide and complex rebel attacks, as well as improvised explosive devices. The report noted a 72% increase in civilian casualties from air raids by pro-government forces this year. It said that international military forces were responsible for one-third of those raids. There were more than 11,000 conflict-related civilian casualties in 2015. I'm Alice Bryant.
This is what's trending today. People around the United States are reacting to two expressions used by Donald Trump during the final presidential debate on Wednesday night. He called Hillary Clinton such a nasty woman and referred to Mexican drug dealers living in the U.S. as bad hombres. Hombre is the Spanish word for man. People following the debate had fun with the unusual phrases. Chelsea Handler is a comedian and host of a late-night television show. She posted a poll on Twitter asking, "Are you a bad hombre or a nasty woman?" Over 45,000 people voted. So far, 61% of voters considered themselves a nasty woman. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. When you listen to music or read books in English, you will often hear and see how English speakers use different grammatical structures to change the sound of a sentence. The speakers will use these different structures or devices to direct your attention to one or more words. They can also use changes in wording to create a variety or mix in the kinds of sentences they use. Today, we consider a simple word, there. We will learn how to use the word there to change the sound of a sentence. We also will learn how grammar controls when the speaker emphasizes the word there.
Have you found that English speakers often say the word there in different ways? In an earlier Everyday Grammar program, we examined how grammar can influence the sound of a sentence. we played David Bowie's song Starman. It starts like this.
There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd go out.
So, why did Bowie sing There's a Starman Waiting in the Sky? Why not choose wording like a starman is waiting in the sky, or in the sky, a starman is waiting? All of these sentences have the same meaning. While we may never know the exact reason Bowie chose these words, we can be fairly sure that this sentence sounded the best to his musical ear. The question becomes this: why did it sound best to his ear? One reason could be that the sentence uses what grammar expert Martha Kolln calls the there transformation.
The there transformation means changing the order of words in a sentence by adding the word there. When this happens, the word there acts as an expletive, a word that does not actually have meaning. The two sentences, a starman is waiting in the sky, and there's a starman waiting in the sky, have the same meaning. However, in the second sentence, there is acting as a placeholder. It is pushing the subject of the sentence, a starman, to a different position. When you hear or see the sentence, a starman is waiting in the sky, it is clear that the noun, a starman, is the subject of the sentence. When you hear or see the sentence, there's a starman waiting in the sky, the noun phrase, a starman, is also acting as the subject. So, what could be the difference between the sentences if the meaning is the same? The difference is about style, a way of presenting things, and emphasis. English speakers will often say the words, there's a, quickly, and then emphasize the word directly following, usually the subject of the sentence. The indefinite article, a, is sending a message that the subject will have new information. So, when Bowie sings, there's a starman waiting in the sky, he is setting up the sentence. In this way, he emphasizes the subject of the sentence, which is also the name of the song. You can hear this structure in other songs. Consider There's a Place by the Beatles.
There's a place where I can go.
The Beatles could have said, I can go to a place. And that expression would have the same meaning as there's a place where I can go. But, as you can hear, the sentence, I can go to a place, does not sound nearly as good as the, there's a place where I can go.
You can learn from David Bowie and the Beatles. They are showing you what native English speakers do with their voices when speaking. Here is the point. If you want to speak or write a sentence that emphasizes the subject, you can use the there transformation. If you want to speak or write a sentence that does not emphasize the subject, you can use a normal sentence. Both choices are grammatically correct, but their effects are different because of their use of different grammatical structures.
Until now, We have talked about the expletive there plus an indefinite subject. For example, let's return to the earlier sentences. There's a star man, or there's a place. What happens when there is followed by a definite subject, such as the star man, or the place? If you use the definite article the, you are suggesting that the subject is old or known information. If you wanted to change the wording we talked about at the beginning of this report, so that we used there is the instead of there is a, you could say,
there's the star man we were talking about. There's the place I want to go.
When you do this, the meaning of the sentence has changed. In both examples, you can hear that the emphasis is placed on there because it is acting as an adverb. It is giving information about the location or placement of the subject. The sound of the sentence is much different than the sentence that begins with there is a. In these new sentences, the speakers are noting the location adverb because it is new and important information. In general, they do not emphasize the subject.
You will hear this structure often in everyday speech or in films. Here is a line from Jackie Brown, a film by Quentin Tarantino. The American actor Samuel L. Jackson plays a criminal who sells guns and drugs. While watching a television ad for guns, he makes the following comment.
And that there is the Tech 9. They advertised this Tech 9 as the most popular gun in American crime.
In this sentence, you can hear Jackson emphasize the adverbial there. He is pointing his finger at the TV screen and emphasizing the position of the gun. We know that the name of the gun is old or already known because he says the Tech 9. What is new is the location of the gun on the television screen.
The important point in this report is that grammatical structures can have an effect on how a sentence sounds. The purpose of individual words in a sentence can influence how they are said or emphasized. You will often hear the words, there is a, in which the subject after the indefinite article is emphasized. You will also hear, there is the, in which the adverb there is emphasized. The subject is generally not emphasized.
Both of these sentence structures are common in popular music and everyday language. By understanding how sentence structure and grammar have an effect on pronunciation, you can improve your writing and speaking skills. You can think about if you are using one structure too often, or if you are not using the right structure for the right situation. These ideas are difficult, but remember this. Native English speakers only use these words and grammatical structures with ease because they have been learning them since birth. You too can learn and master these structures, but it will take time and effort. I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.